Our final meeting of February 2012 will come to order, please.
We're the first one up.
Oh, we are.
The legislative assistant will note the roll, please. Welcome, everyone, to this very important meeting today. We have two bills on the agenda. One is an encouragement bill, and the other one is a prohibition bill. And today is also a special day for MACD, so we have Cindy Christ in the audience, and we hope to hear from her at the end of our meeting today so she can talk about some things that she'd like to share on behalf of MACD. This is also Hospitality Day, so it is most appropriate that we welcome anyone from the hospitality industry here. So on behalf of me, we can make the case for our prohibition on that we've had in place starting school after Labor Day. So, welcome to the committee, Representative McFarland. I will move Senate File 1073, recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And I believe you have the A1 amendment. Would
yes,
you please
I do,
move
Madam
that?
Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative McFarland moves the S1073A1 amendment. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair, it just basically changes the heading.
Yes, it's a change to the title. Seeing and hearing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Will you explain your bill, please, Representative McFarland?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1073 comes to us from the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and it was authored by Senator Carla Nelson in the Senate. It's one of their many recommendations to help us produce an effective workforce for today and tomorrow. The bill proposes a transition plan for high school students to successfully pursue post-secondary education and employment. I'd like to mention just a couple things before we have our testifier speak, that Section 2 was added on the House floor last week. It did pass in the Senate floor February 20th with a vote of 48-12. Also, I just will note that the lines 2.20 to 24, I believe it is, that speaks about the financing. There would be no state financing for it. And anyway, I also passed out some handouts that are part of the All Hands on Deck report. Our testifiers will probably be referring to them, so they're back to back in your packets. So to better explain the bill, I'm fortunate to have with me four testifiers today. And I'd like to introduce the first one, Brian Lindsley, the Executive Director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council.
And before we proceed, Representative Barrett, would you move the minutes from February 23, please?
Madam Chair, the minutes are excellent. I'd be happy to move them.
These minutes are excellent because I worked with my legislative assistant to make sure we had the language correct. So thank you very much for that compliment. Thank you to my L.A. Because she's so astute about checking things. So Representative Barrett moves the minutes from February 23. Is there any discussion, corrections, or additions? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. I'm sorry that I had to interrupt Representative McFarland. Would you say the name of your first guest?
I'll let him introduce himself.
Oh, thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please say your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, and members of the committee. My name is Brian Lindsley. I'm the Executive Director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Lindsley. Will you proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am here today in support of Senate File 1073, which encourages all students to plan ahead for life after high school and to increase their success in moving on to more education or work. I am here because the Governor's Workforce Development Council voted unanimously to support this recommendation a couple years ago, and it was recently reaffirmed by the board. It has a broad base of support. Our members represent business, labor, community-based organizations, education, and commissioners from the previous administration and commissioners from this current administration. So it has bipartisan support as well. 21 other states have implemented recommendations similar to this, which is one additional reason why we like it quite a bit. And why do we need it, really, is I think why we're here. And one main reason is the skills gap that we've pointed to many times before in our reports. As Representative McFarland pointed out, there are excerpts of this report. I have the kind of nice color version here. I encourage you all to go and check it out on our website. And there's many other education recommendations there if you're interested in putting forth a bill. But it's projected that 70% of Minnesota jobs will require some sort of post-secondary education in just 6 years. So it's crucial now more than ever that students are ready for life after graduation, that they at least have some idea of the opportunities available to them, whether that's more education, a job, that they just need to know their options. And unfortunately, right now, a lot of students do not know the options available to them. And without a plan, it's hard to make that transition to whatever's next. Right now, Minnesota loses about $90 million in costs associated with remediation, and $50 million of those dollars are directly costs related to the government. So students who need remediation are more likely to complete their degree, and taking the right high school course is the best predictor of post-secondary success. So before I go on any further, I'd like to introduce Mo Amundson, who's the chair, a member of the GWDC and chair of our education committee.
Welcome to our committee, Ms. Amundson. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Mo Amundson. Thank you very much, Chair Erickson, for having us, and I really, really appreciate Representative McFarland for bringing this bill forward again. We were here last year testifying, and I'm just thrilled to be back. And thank you for all representatives for having us again, and I look forward to watching this bill move through. As Brian said, we are really concerned about students not knowing their options, and that's what this bill speaks to. It is not a bill to pigeonhole kids. This is a bill to make sure that all students have the opportunity and the information to make good decisions while they're in high school so that they're not floundering and wasting their time as soon as they graduate. And many students don't graduate. So this would give them an opportunity to find out what they like, what they want to do, and save the state money, save their parents money, save themselves money by not going through remediation, by not going through floundering and not knowing what options are available. This wouldn't necessarily take the place of a counselor, because we have a student here who's going to testify shortly about her experience with college and career preparation. And I'm so excited to have her back as well. We're looking to make sure that students have information, nothing more, nothing less, just information to make good decisions. And that's what this bill speaks to.
Thank you very much. Welcome, sir, to our committee. Say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair and fellow members of the committee, my name is Ralph Alexander.
Please proceed.
I'm a guidance counselor at Harding High School in St. Paul. Most high schools in Minnesota have sort of a drop-in college and career program, and I'm here to say that at Harding High School we have a comprehensive program. I'm a lot like a coach that says everybody must take a lap. Not anybody that wants to practice can practice, it's optional. That's not the way it works. We're fully accountable with the students. We have real-time tracking. I look at the pie charts every single day to see how we're doing. Fundamentally, I think there's the two most important elements of a comprehensive program are having a software program such as Naviance that coordinates the service. And in the last several years, we've had 100% completion of that program, making sure that every student is completely and entirely accountable. Second thing I think is important is licensed counselors that, like the coach, makes everyone complete. I want to talk to you a little bit about the results of such a comprehensive program. In 2005, we set a goal for our students of gaining $500,000 in scholarships. Not financial aid, $500,000 in scholarships. Last year, our students reached $12 million. That's the result of a coordinated, comprehensive program. I also want to say that, again, that we had 100% completion for the last 5 years as well. That the students go through this program, they're accountable. Every person in the building, they're accountable to them. Everybody knows what everybody's doing. So perhaps when I started 9 years ago in this building, I might say to a student, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to St. Paul College. Maybe yes, maybe no. Now I know the student's going, if they've applied, if they've been accepted, if they have scholarship money, if they've done their financial aid. All these things are now accountable. And I think that it's a very effective way to advantage students. The next thing I wanted to say is that I bring with me Mai Chi Vang, who started out in education as an ELL language learner. And from there, she transferred from Nebraska, where they didn't have a comprehensive program, to our high school. And she went from an ELL student to winning a full scholarship at St. Ben's and being very successful in college. So here's a real example of the kinds of things that accountability brings to your school. Also, I also tell you that I was thrilled last year when we came to the Senate that this was the actual first time in her life she'd ever spoken into a microphone, and it was at the state capitol. So she's here to talk more about what it's meant personally to her. But again, I think that the real magic of what this is about student accountability and making sure that everybody must succeed, not just everyone that drops in. Mai Chi?
Welcome to our committee, Ms. Chi Vang. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Hi, my name is Mai Chi Vang, and I just want to thank you guys for having me here again. All right. I'm a first year at the College of St. Benedict, and I would have never have gotten this far without the help of the College and Career Center at Harding High School. So I moved from Omaha, Nebraska to about 2 years ago before my senior year, and then I had no clue where I should go to like college because I was in a new state. I didn't know anyone. I had no connections. I was so scared that I was going to like go to a community college instead of a four-year college. And then I came to Harding, and that was where I met Mr. Alexander and the College and Career Center. All right, so their mission is to help out students in need of searching for college, searching for scholarships to apply to, and I mean, if college wasn't their choice, then the CCC helps them find a job afterward so that they have like a life to do instead of just laying around at home. So my life back in Nebraska, we had like no real structure of where to go after high school. We had counselors, but they didn't really push us. And then the only reason why I took the ACT back then was because everybody was talking about it. I mean, I had no clue why I needed to take the ACT. It was just like, oh, okay, I'm just going to take it because everybody else is doing it, so why not? But now I know that you need to take the ACT in order to get accepted into college. And so I would call back to my friends, and then, like, I'll check up on them. And then most of them, they had no clue what the FAFSA was. And then my friend, he said that, oh, I can't go to college because I can't afford it. Well, I mean, like, if he would have known what the FAFSA was and if he would have applied on time, then he would have gotten, like, the money to go to college and pursue a higher education. So at Harding, all the counselors, they push every single student into finding scholarships for college, making sure that they actually like do their work instead of just sitting around and playing games on the computer. And then we're always constantly reminding of how important it is to make sure that we meet all of these scholarships due date on time, so that we don't fall back behind and we don't lose that money that we could have gotten to help us pay for college. And then I'm always in the CCC, and I'm always like looking up scholarships and applying to colleges everywhere, and it was a really, really big help for me. And so I have a sister who's a 10th grader at Harding High School, and I'm really, really glad that she's there, because I know that the help of the CCC will change her life, like how they did mine. And then I know that Harding CCC will not let any student fall back behind and fail in the scholarship. And they will make sure that every single student goes to college or finds a job after graduation, instead of just staying at home in their parents' basement all their life. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. J. Bang. You should work for a public marketing firm, because you do a great job, or a private marketing firm, whichever. But thank you very much. Were you part of the AVID program at Harding, Ms. Chang?
No, I came in before my senior year, so it was too late for me to apply.
Sure. Thank you very much. Representative McFarland?
Well, I think that my testifiers have done a really good job of laying out the bill. Were there any questions or comments?
First of all, I'll ask, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in opposition or with concerns for Senate File 1073? Then, Representative McFarland, I'll open it for questions. And Representative Benson, you lead off.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it Mr. Alexander?
Yes.
Mr. Alexander, could you tell me what the whether the student counselor ratio in your school is similar to what we see across the state?
Yes, it is. We have six.
Mr. Alexander.
Thank you. We have six counselors in our school and a student population of over 2,000.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Alexander, I'm just wondering, if you're able to accomplish what you do, and congratulations for the great work you're doing, can you explain why what you're doing is not happening in other high schools, or what might be the impediments to a more aggressive, student counseling effort in those other schools?
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, I think our school is invested in the College and Career Center, and that we have additional staff that help with that. So in addition to the counselors, we have support staff that assist with testing and other guidance-related activities, so it actually theoretically would bring our counseling ratio down. I think we've had the same staff for a long period of time, so that's helped. Coordination of services.
Madam Chair.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a little follow-up. Now, you mentioned that the counselor-student ratio is the same, but now you've indicated that there are additional staff. How do you fund that? And the reason I'm asking these questions is that Minnesota, I believe, is still at the bottom of all the states in the union in student counselor ratios, and we've had a long debate about whether this is where our state ought to be. So I'm wondering, how is your district funding the additional staff? And of course, the reason I'm asking is I'm wondering whether additional staff funding is possible in other states, since I see in this bill there is no additional funding to make, you know, to facilitate the objective of this new mandate.
Mr. Alexander, I don't know if you can answer that. It's not relevant,
mandate.
You know, to the bill, but if you wish. Representative McFarland,
I'd
comment?
I'd like to say this isn't a mandate because it's strongly encouraging, and also that they are encouraging funding from other sources outside of the state.
Correct.
Private sector, nonprofit, things like that.
So I'm Mr. Alexander, did you wish to respond?
Yeah, we our school is out of our general school fund has made that a priority, and therefore we've had increased results with increased staffing. I mean, it's just a pretty linear relationship between the two.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
To the bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the reminder. I have a question for Representative McFarland and also a comment. First of all, the comment, I would like to thank you for bringing that forth. This does show the value of high school counselors in our schools. It shows what they do and what is expected of them in the part of post-secondary planning and so on. It doesn't mention all the other tasks that counselors do in schools that we can't forget. Mm-hmm. But I do thank you for that opportunity to put that language in the bill to do that. Then the other pieces that go along with this is, as you are, I was going to ask questions similar to looking at the dollars that grants and so on and things like that, and that helped answer that. Mm-hmm. Because I know school budgets are tight, and also outstate Minnesota may not have as many benefits to getting the counselor ratios the same. And so I know that the total number can be as high as 759 to 1. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very great help for that, and I appreciate that. And that's all I had,
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair.
Representative Peterson Sandra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate that this bill is before us, because I really think it's necessary, and most schools are trying to find some ways to accommodate what is in this bill. I think it's an absolute necessity that our students start planning, because when you look at, what was it, I read 80,000 jobs that manufacturing, for instance, is looking for, and they don't have anyone prepared. And I know that's true in other sectors, too. Many of our students graduate with no idea about what courses they need, what jobs are out there. The jobs are very different. And I had a personal experience now trying to find assist someone in their mid-40s to find a job, and it's a whole different world because the jobs are very different, and the way you find the jobs is different, and it's really crucial that students are prepared in high school. And also the young woman brought up the funding issue, the scholarships, so I'm really pleased that Representative McFarland brought this bill before us. I think it's just time we do this.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also would like to commend the author for this bill. I think it is a good bill, and just to add a little bit to that, many of you may or may not know, but my wife was a student teacher at St. Paul Harding just a couple years ago, spent the fall there, and that's where she learned how to be a teacher at the high school, and she loved it there. She loved the diversity, she loved the kids, she loved the faculty, but one of the things she didn't like is the fact that too many kids just weren't looking forward to a career after high school, and that really, really bothered her. She felt she saw potential in all of these kids, and yet the potential was not, you know, the kids didn't see it themselves. So anything we can do to help these kids learn that they just have so much potential to go to the next level is a good thing, and I just want to commend you for that, and just let you know it's a great bill.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just by way of a little explanation, I was on the school board for the Crookston Public Schools, where we had one counselor. We have about 1,300 students. We do have some other mental health counselors and those types of things to deal with issues like that, but career counseling is something that very lacks, and I know that the counselor is overloaded. But my question is Representative McFarland, would this allow for businesses to come in and do some type of career counseling showing 9th through 12th graders what opportunities were out there? Is that, is this part of this idea, or?
I'll let Mr. Alexander answer.
Mr. Alexander.
Thank you. We're incredibly thankful and try to be resourceful in resources that are available in the community. I can tell you what, last night that school got at 2 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock there were still 100 people in the College and Career Center, and I would say 15 of them were volunteers from the different college admissions and financial aid offices. So we're always bringing in people in business. Anybody that would call, we would try to activate and use them as a resource in the school.
And also, Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative McFarland.
Ms. Amundson has an example of what's happening in Rochester that might be helpful for the committee.
Ms. Amundson.
Madam Chair, what we've done in Rochester is, it's called, we have a CARE committee, which means collaboration among Rochester educators, and as such, we have taken the middleman out of our PSEO funding, which is actually the Department of Education. The funding used to stay with the Department of Education, and then they would pay the bills at the college, and then the rest of the money they would keep because they needed it for administrative fees, and that's exactly what happened. And what we've done is we have, with the blessing of the Department of Education over the past 10 years, we have kept the funding in the schools. So we take the money, and for the student, we keep the student actually on our schedule at school. We pay the college directly for those costs, and the money that's recovered, instead of going to administration at the Department of Education level, we keep that funding. And what we've done with that funding are two things. One of them is, and actually it's significant funding, it's about $1 million over the last 10 years, or last 7 years, I guess I can count, but we have a program that during the summer, students who self-identify that they want to take the ACCUPLACER and take classes at Rochester Community and Technical College, we pay for their remediation in the summer with those funds. So those students are ready to go to college in the fall. They've taken all the remediation courses that they need, and it's at no expense. It doesn't cost anyone any expense. It's the funding that we've saved. And the other thing that we do with it is we pay for some scholarships for students who are going into, like, nursing assistant, things like that. That it's those types of career programs, because those students, it costs $168 per student for them to take that licensure fee. Now, these are students who can go right into the workforce, and so we've provided scholarships for that and funding for those types of career efforts. So we've done very well in being good, responsible financial people and conservative with their funds, but doing good things for kids with them, and it's been a great program. And there are other, because our college is very innovative, there are other districts around us who have done the same thing. So it's a great program, and it keeps the Department of Education from having to do extra work that they don't really have the staffing to do either. So
thank you for being so resourceful, because that is an excellent idea, and I hope others are listening so they take advantage of that as well. Representative Peterson Brandon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McFarland, is this the, I see that you got this from the Governor's Workforce Development Council. Is this the entirety of the recommendation as it relates to this issue? And I guess my question more specifically is, were there any suggested modifications to the Safe School Levy?
Representative McFarland?
This is recommendation 11 in their report in entirety. I don't believe it had anything to do with that. Which brings up that at the One Minnesota Conference, Inez Wildwood was there giving a report to the legislators about the other things that the council is looking at. So if you want to check with that, there's many other records.
Members, if you have a cell phone that you have on, would you make sure it's off? Thank you. And Representative McFarland, I hate to interrupt, but members, if you look at the handout, there's single sheets because I didn't want it stapled so that we could prevent that recycling hazard. But recommendation 11 is found in those loose pages, and that's to what Representative McFarland is referring. Representative McFarland, please continue.
Mr. Lindsley has a
thank you, Mr. Lindsley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a recommendation that the council endorsed in 2010 and has endorsed in every year thereafter. And the one, I think, difference between our recommendation and this bill is that we wanted to require this legislation because we thought it was so important. And so we have had bills in previous sessions to do that. But we still think that strongly encouraging and helping student or school districts find the funding is a step in the right direction. Thank you
very much, Mr. Munsley. Are there other questions? Representative Peterson, were you satisfied with your answer?
Yeah, I just wanted to get clarification that the Governor's Council did not recommend any additional safe school levy. So,
Representative McFarland, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think also I wanted to recognize, I think Representative Kiefer serves on this council also, so thank you. Just hope that you'll support these efforts. We can't waste any of our precious resources of our children, our leaders of tomorrow, and so I hope that you'll pass this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. With that, I renew the motion that Senate File 1073, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and Senate File 1073, as amended, is on its way to the floor. Thank you very much, guests. It was great to have you, and you gave us some really good information and some great ideas. Representative Depke. And members, just for your schedules, we will continue tonight in room 10. If this committee hearing needs more time, welcome Representative Depke to the testifying table.
Good
and
morning.
I will move House File 2325 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I will be introducing and talking about House File 2325, which is the Flexible Learning Year Bill. I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking to you about the intent of the bill, because I think that intent is something we've kind of gotten away from in this legislative body, and it's important to me, and I'm going to be talking to you about it. This bill is all about having locally elected school boards having the ability to adapt a school calendar that best meets the needs of their students and community, while at the same time, this particular bill recognizes the uniquely Minnesota need for another extended holiday at the end of the summer. House File 2325 proposes to allow locally elected school boards to determine their own school calendar, but would prohibit school from being held on the Thursday and Friday before Labor Day. Our state school calendar should not be determined only on the needs of selected private sector industries. School districts need and deserve flexibility to tailor a calendar based on today's economy that is much different from the calendar of the last century. Schools and families should not be restrained by a calendar of the past, and our students are competing nationally and internationally with other students. In our high schools today, our graduation rates are too low, and in 70% of our students will be required to have post-secondary education within the next 5 to 10 years. We just sat through a presentation by Representative McFarland about partnering and post-secondary education and getting students excited about going on to the next aspect of their lives. There is a growing interest in creating partnerships between K-12 education and post-secondary education. A vast majority of the higher education institutions began the year prior to Labor Day, allowing school districts to better align their calendars with higher education institutions would enhance opportunities for students to participate in PSEO, college in the schools, and other early college programs. In addition to that, the MCA exams and AP exams are given in the spring. Minnesota schools are held highly accountable for how their students perform on these exams, allowing more instructional days prior to these exams will give teachers more time to cover the curriculum and content on which students are assessed during these exams. And finally, starting the school year prior to Labor Day would allow school districts to end the first semester prior to winter break. This would allow schools to begin the new semester following the break for much more logical and less disruptive transition. I have a number of people that are going to be supporting this bill today, but I just want to name all the organizations that are here. It's a very impressive list. The Minnesota Parent Teacher Association is supporting this bill. The Minnesota Rural Education Association, the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, the Minnesota Elementary School Principals, the Association for Equity in Education, Education Minnesota, and the Minnesota Business Partnership. Believe me, there are very few bills that both Education Minnesota and the Minnesota Business Partnership come together to agree on, and I'm very proud to be able to carry this bill for both of them today. I would now like to have those that are in favor of the bill please come up to testify.
Welcome to our committee, and please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is John Malone. I'm chair of the Orono School Board. I've been on the board since 2000. I'm former past chair of AMSD, and I would just like to thank this committee for the real honor to testify. I would also like to thank Representative Depke for the really close work that she does with our school district and with our Citizen Legislative Advocacy Committee, Orono Action. She's been a wonderful advocate for education. We greatly appreciate that.
Thank you.
I would just like to testify in support of Bill 2325, and I think it's very important from a school board perspective that we be allowed this opportunity for those three primary reasons. We need more instructional time before the high-stakes tests. We need a more logical school calendar that could be completed prior to the holiday break, and we need better alignment with our post-secondary options that our students are increasingly deciding to enroll in. I think it's instructive that in a 2008 survey by the Minnesota School Boards Association, 72% of the school districts, when given the choice, would opt for a pre-September 1st start. 28% said that they would still start post-Labor Day, but what was instructive to me was that that meant 100% of those school districts would be making this a decision that would best foster student achievement for their students, and I think that that's very significant. I also think it's important that based on a National School Boards Association study, 75% of the nation's public schools start in August, pre-September 1st, and so you can see that given the choice, almost every school district opts for a pre-Labor Day start, and there's reasons for that. They're not just making a random choice. It's a calculated decision about what will best foster student achievement. Since there's only a handful of states that do mandate a post-Labor Day start, I thought it would be instructive to look at why they did that, and I focused on Virginia because most information was available about it. And in Virginia, it's referred to as the King Dominion's Law, after an amusement park in Southern Virginia. So obviously the rationale is the same as here, is that, you know, to help out the struggling tourism industry. Charles Pyle, the Director of Communications for the Virginia Department of Education, was quoted in a recent interview that the law was originally passed as a temporary mandate for 2 years to help out the industry in 1986, and it's still there. But there's strong opposition to it. In fact, the governor, Robert McDonald, who had long supported this law, indicated this year that it was time to get rid of that state mandate, and indicated that repeal was a central part of his education reform package. Joan Wodiska, the president of the Virginia School Boards Association, was recently quoted as saying, "For many, many, many years, the Virginia School Boards Association top legislative priority has been to abolish the Labor Day law. Virginia School Board members strongly and loudly support the request for full repeal. Much has changed in the nearly three decades since the passage of the law. This relic of an old economy is the definition of a burdensome, costly, outdated, and unnecessary state mandate." And there's strong bipartisan support in agreement with that. On February 12th, the 2012 Virginia House voted in an overwhelmingly bipartisan way, 76 to 23, to repeal the mandate, though repeal in the state Senate is still in question. You can get a waiver in Virginia, and every state or every division seeks that waiver if you can show that you get a little bit of snow. And, you know, the Charles Pyle, the Director of Communications, said, because they receive snow and ice during the winter, they are at risk to lose instructional time during the year, and they are allowed to begin the school year before Labor Day. Every division seeks it, and currently 75 of 132 divisions are granted it. And I would note that it was 61 and sunny all day throughout Virginia yesterday. So, you know, and there's been several experiences on our board, too, where, you know, I'll serve on committees where we're trying to find some extra time to change parent-teacher conferences to better align with instructional data, and trying to find days is extremely difficult. And I say that because, you know, we'll often hear the comment, oh, you got plenty of time between Labor Day and June 15th. There's all kinds of days in there. There really aren't. Those days are spoken for, and we struggle to find any extra time. We really struggle, too, with AP and getting those instructional days in. We used to have some things built into our schedule that would allow specialized instruction or time for school meetings. We've had to get rid of that, even though it was very helpful to our students. The AP teacher said, we need every day. We're already starting late, and we need every day pre-May 5th. In the packet, I've included a lot of information about this, about how it really works against us. I've also included an article from Education Next, written by a Maryland professor who studied Minnesota third grade math test scores from 2002 to 2005, and his conclusion was there was substantial year-to-year variation in the number of instructional days students had prior to the test day. Of this test score increase, a large portion was attributable to expansion of instructional time prior to the test. And it really seems compelling from my school board perspective anyway. The last week of August is not family time, it's not vacation time, it's school time. That's just the reality, and we might as well accept that fact. It's school time in every way except the classroom, and to us that just doesn't make sense. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Malone. Ms. Shelbert, please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Sorry.
My name is Lisa Shelbeck, and I am a member of the Mounds View School Board, and I'd like to thank you for giving me this time this morning to testify. I am also in support of House File 2325. It really comes down to a couple key points that I'd like to touch on really briefly here. The first is that I really strongly believe the decision of school calendar is best decided at the local level. Each locally elected school board should have the ability to make decisions that best reflect their students' and communities' unique needs. In Mounds View, a repeal would allow for greater innovation and flexibility. For example, student and staff orientation, early conferences at all levels, K through 12, and early assessments and better student placements earlier in the year. While at Mounds View, we already do these initiatives in varying forms, having extra time at the beginning would allow us to expand these programs with more flexibility and less scheduling constraints. Also, I believe there are several calendar considerations. High school fall sports and activities begin in mid-August. In reality, families are already beginning the school year. And so it only makes sense that we actually open our doors to our students and start classroom instruction. Intuitively in Moundsview, we believe our students and families are ready to come back in mid-August, and we have certainly heard from families that they would rather start earlier and conclude the school year earlier. Lastly, I would like to say that I believe House File 2325 is just good policy. School calendars should be based on the ever-demanding educational needs of our students, not on the needs of certain private sector industries. Minnesota has long prided itself on its superior and innovative public schools. If we expect our students to compete with their peers in this global world, we need to make decisions. We need to provide local decision makers with all the tools possible and not impede on their ability to provide innovation and superior classroom instruction. Minnesota needs to remove itself from the list of a handful of states that prohibit the start of school prior to Labor Day. I respectfully ask that you support House File 2325. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schobeck. Next, I'd like to have Superintendent Olson from St. Peter. So then we'll go on to Minnesota School Boards Association. And I guess MREA will follow that. Welcome to our table. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Yeah. Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And it's tough to follow two school board members who are in the trenches dealing with this on a day-to-day basis. And I think they've laid out the arguments very clearly for you on why it's best for school board members to make this decision based on the needs of their community, with the overarching goal of improving student achievement. And I think that that's part of the argument and part of the reason we're seeking this piece. With increasing standards and increasing demands in a competitive world, we want to have every tool in the toolbox to improve student achievement. And I think that's where why we're supporting this. And we represent 336 of the school districts, and this has been a long-held position by school boards across the state to support this measure to allow flexibility. I just want to go through a couple things for you. What this bill does not force school districts to start before Labor Day.
Right.
It doesn't. I mean, it gives you the school district's choice. This bill does not take away the right for school boards to start after Labor Day. They can do that if they want to, and that's the beauty of this bill, and I think that needs to be understood. This does not mean that districts will start in the middle of July. You will hear stories that this means that districts will start in the middle of July. I can guarantee you that districts will need to evaluate their energy costs. They will need to look at their building demands. They will make those decisions. They are elected officials. They're smart individuals and make good decisions about when and where they're going to start school. Also, the bill does not remove the 4-H opportunities for public school students. We have seen with the FLY application, and Mr. Walseth is going to talk a little bit about that, that districts have listened to their communities, they've made changes, they made amendments to allow those students to go to 4-H because of the important learning opportunities that go on there. They understand that. And I think the bill does allow boards to seek more valuable input from the community, and I think the board members have touched on that. It also expands learning opportunities in efforts to improve student achievement. It gives districts more freedom to explore different learning models for students and communities, aligns MNSCU with PSEO, concurrent enrollment opportunities, and I think one of the things that also is it reduces the administrative burden for the school districts and the Department of Education. Instead of them going through a FLY application, a flexible learning year application each time, with the possibility of being rejected, that this gives the boards an opportunity, and I think our school boards can make that decision. And I think one of the discussions also that needs to be talked about is the learning gap that exists in the current structure, that this would give districts more opportunities to look at improved learning models in the summer. Wouldn't mean that we would start school in the summer, but there could be academies, institutes that the districts could certainly attack. And so I think that MSBA understands the issues before you, and I think this is a bill that's more about choice and it's more about trust. And I think importantly that school boards want to make that choice, and today I think by supporting this bill you're going to show that you trust school board members at the local level to make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderwind. Mr. Walseth. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Thank you for allowing me to come up with Mr. Schneiderwind. I do want to piggyback on his comments and to say that for a long time the MREA has supported calendar flexibility. And a few years ago, 25 school districts in the southwest part of the state were successful in getting a flexible learning year application through the Department of Education. Those 25 districts encompass about 14 or 15,000 students. And I know there was a lot of concern, especially about the 4-H students being allowed to participate in the state fair. Those 4-H students are the pride and joy of rural Minnesota. We love those kids, love them, seeing the blue jackets around the Capitol this time of year. Those districts made sure to make accommodations for those students so they could participate fully in state fair activities. I think you're going to hear some concerns today from the state fair about that. In a few examples, some of those districts in the FLY group did make accommodations, and they decided that while they're going to go to the common calendar with the start date and all the staff development dates, they did take the Friday, the Friday preceding the state or Labor Day weekend. They did not hold class on that weekend to make sure that they were fully accommodating those 4-H students. And I think for local officials, it's very frustrating to constantly have to negotiate with St. Paul. Someone in St. Paul, when you're quite frankly accountable to your local families and community members, and that's where we think this decision belongs. There are a lot of, you know, time is limited for people, and there are a lot of competing interests out there for families. And I think as we move forward, you know, some districts are looking at, you know, you've got parent groups wanting to add back a spring break in March or April. You know, we need to have more flexibility locally to design the learning year, and this bill would allow us a lot more flexibility. So, Madam Chair, members, I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walseth. Minnesota Association of Superintendents, Gary Amoroso. And let's bring down Brad Lundell from C as well. Welcome to our committee, Mr.
Thank
Amoroso.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I'll be very brief because most of the comments have already been made, but would just like to reinforce that we truly believe that this is a local issue. Our school boards are elected by their communities, and they know best in terms of what type of calendar can best meet the needs of not only the students within the building, but also of the community. We strongly believe that our schools are very vibrant in August. If you go to most middle school and high school campuses in August, you're going to see students involved in co-curricular activities, as well as you're going to see many mentoring programs and many orientation programs that have begun to spring up across our state to prepare students for school. So the concept that our schools are laying dormant in August, and then all of a sudden the day after Labor Day everything kicks in, is not factual. Our students are very full of life and are very vibrant in August, and this bill will provide an opportunity for more interactions. The concept of having a greater alignment with our colleagues in the post-secondary world is also something that I think is very, very much worth your consideration. It will provide us an opportunity to become more in line, which would be a benefit to our students. And lastly, the overarching theme is that all of us are interested in improving student achievement, and I believe that, as we just heard from our colleagues at MSBA, to provide our school boards and communities with another tool to attack that issue is something that I think is very worth considering. I want to thank Representative Depke for bringing this issue forward, and respectfully request that you support House File 2325 and would stand for questions.
Thank you, sir. And we have a letter, members, from C, Schools for Equity in Education, signed by Mr. Lundell, so I think that suffices for his testimony. Are there others who would like to speak in support? If not, then let's hear from those with concerns. Mr. Carlson will take you first. Welcome to our committee. Say your name for the record and begin. You have a tough act to follow.
I know.
We know how it turns out.
Oh, we'll see. Say your name for the record, please, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts. And I want to say in the very beginning that the Congress of Minnesota Resorts supports quality education as a number one or top priority for the state of Minnesota. And I've been here a lot of times on this issue, but I don't think I've ever been in a room with as many friendly but unfriendly faces. There is no bride or groom side for Joe and I to sit on today. My first blush with the post Labor Day start was in 1985. Mm-hmm. As a freshman legislator, Rudy Perpich was governor, Ronald Reagan was president. Out of Africa was the best picture of the year. However, maybe more appropriately, Back to the Future was the top grossing film of that year. In 1985, I had hair, I was not married, and I drove a Chevette. Now, 27 years later, I have two kids. I have a son who has now graduated from college and has spent 2 years as a civil engineer. And I asked him why he went into engineering. He said, "You guys work on the same stuff in politics every time. I want to do something different when I get up and go to work." So, you know, we've been at this issue a long, long time. And I know it's a bone that the school associations and others like to pick up and chew on every year. We've tried compromise. We've tried September 1st, and that didn't work. We've defeated repeals of this law. We've been through four governors now, four presidents, and here we go again. Members, you know, we have never been convinced that there is a correlation or connection between the Labor Day school calendar and improved learning outcomes. I've testified in education committees in the past, and I'll say it again. If the last thing that we need to do to improve student achievement is to repeal the post-Labor Day start, we will help you do it. But we know that there are so many more things that you can do without taking this step, which has a dramatic impact on a number of segments of Minnesota's economy, that we would like you to focus on other reforms before you take this step. And, you know, just as to a couple of the issues, and we've been through them before, but I don't think there's anyone in the room here that wants to argue that we have complete local control of our school districts. We have hundreds of pages of statutes that govern how our schools, even the statute that you're dealing with today, 120A, deals with how many school days they have to have, mandatory attendance, a number of things that affect how local schools operate. So the local control issue, we believe, fails. You know, we've been through No Child Left Behind, the profiles of learning, open enrollment. We have so many mandates on our local schools. This, to us, is a reasonable and additional control that has an important benefit for a number of other aspects of our economy. We don't see any relation to improved learning outcomes. There's no evidence, we don't believe, that approving this change would have an impact on local test scores. And in fact, I think when you look at some of the information that's out there, you could actually make the case that starting after Labor Day can improve learning outcomes. If you compare districts that start consistently after Labor Day to those that we know start before, and a number of them start before Labor Day and have for years, you can see a measurable benefit to starting after Labor Day. Test scores are higher. There is a shorter achievement gap in those districts. So we can't suggest that there is a correlation between starting after Labor Day and improved learning outcomes. And so, Madam Chairman and members, I had a couple other points that I wanted to just make. And please know that the tourism industry and the agriculture industry are not here to say that we are enemies of education. We don't compete with education. We complement it well, both with the economic activity that we generate and the jobs that we provide. And we please hope that you will do as other policymakers have, which is balance all of the interests of the state of Minnesota and continue our tradition of summer, continue what we believe has been a very workable law for others, for school districts, and leave the current law in place as it is. And Madam Chair, happy to answer questions. I see in redistricting, I'm not going to get to have you as my legislator, and I feel badly about that. Maybe after the vote, maybe not. But we do appreciate the time that you that you do spend on this issue. It is very important to a number of people in Minnesota, and not just education. It's important to many others. So appreciate that, Madam Chair, and happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And our next testifier.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Bagnoli. I'm a lawyer at McGranchet Law Firm, and I'm here representing the State Agricultural Society, better known as the Minnesota State Fair. Just a little bit of background on the State Agricultural Society. It is a statewide organization. There are two representatives from every county in the state that come from the County Fair Association that make up the State Fair Association. It is a metro-based organization, obviously. It's been in place since prior to the state. Metro-based organization, but it's completely run by people from greater Minnesota. And these folks come out of the very strong county fair tradition in the state that and those are the folks that tend to seek the leadership in the state fair organization. The state fair is actually the culmination of all of the county fairs, and this is where, as Mr. Carlson mentioned and others, is there's a strong tradition of 4-H that has gone on in the state and continues in future farmers, where kids show their animals, bring their animals through the county fair, which culminates in the state fair. We believe, and as Mr. Carlson said, we believe that the state fair is a lot about education. Miracle of birth is a way that a lot of city folks get to see how the miracle of birth. It's one of the more popular exhibits. We have a technology exhibit. It's a place that all of the state's products, resources, and treasures are brought together, but fundamentally there's a basis that's in agriculture, and that's important to the kids that go through that. We think that there is a strong educational component to that. That is not perhaps in the traditional school setting, but is nevertheless a strong component of what it means to be a Minnesotan. I'm going to read. There was some suggestion that there's been accommodations for 4-H'ers, and that may be true, and perhaps this is an attempt to get at that. I guess the compromise we would maybe seek is instead of 3 days, maybe 6-7 days would be perhaps a compromise. But and I think there has been some attempt to accommodate that, except for what the way it works now is these kids come and they stay for a week at the fairgrounds. There are residential places for them to stay. They stay for the entire week. It is one of the most exciting things that these kids do. Most people, and Senator Vickerman, who left the Senate last year, did this when he was a kid. He still talks about it. I've got a comment from Katie Winslow, who was a senior at Chatfield High School last year, who spoke last year on the behalf of the Root River Rabbits 4-H Club. She'd been contacted last year. She was trying to juggle the state fair responsibilities as well as academics. She had to leave the fair, return home to take a test, and then return to the fair to complete the obligation. It was very stressful to concentrate on both, and she felt she didn't do as well in either category with having to do that. So I would just suggest that it isn't completely work as well, and perhaps doesn't even work as well for the educational component either. The state fair is one of the great traditions of Minnesota. We believe that August tends to be a sacrosanct part time of the year. I know with a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 5-year-old, it's the first time that month of August is the only time of the year where there aren't planned activities. It's a time where we can end the season. We can get up north to some of the resorts. We can end the year in a traditional Minnesota way and start the school year after Labor Day like we always have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Everyone keep in mind this is permissive language. Does not say they must. The prohibition is only on the 2 days prior to Labor Day, the Thursday and Friday. Are there others in the audience who would like to express concerns?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Carlson.
You know, on the issue of, permissive, And we certainly are sympathetic to that. The tourism industry, I think, got hoodwinked on the on the issue in Iowa. Iowa has a requirement that they start after Labor Day unless you make a petition to the Department of Education. Every school district in Iowa, with the exception of six, petitioned to start before Labor Day. We need this guardrail in place so that we have a uniform start date. And it is not, you know, having Park Rapids start after Labor Day is not the issue. Our guests don't come from Park Rapids, and they don't stay for a weekend. You know, I represent the very smallest of small resorts, and they're going to be here, by the way, starting this afternoon and all day tomorrow. I hope you'll get a chance to greet them. But they, you know, they have weekly bookings. They're not set up. Their business is not set up. Neither are family-run businesses. Most of them have no non-family employees. They run on a weekly booking basis. And so saying that you're going to have a Thursday or a Friday simply does not comport with how their business operates. And you're talking about a business that operates on a 10-week season. And when you start school in mid-August, you are now condensing that down to an 8-week season. It is very difficult to be viable even at 10, but if you condense that down to 8, it is almost impossible to remain a viable business. So we appreciate the time you've given to this issue. Thank you.
Representative Depke, in your research, how many other states that have active tourism begin before Labor Day, have school starts before Labor Day?
Well, all except five are required to start after Labor Day. We're one of five states, and I'll be happy to list them. But
and then, Representative Depke, how many states have, like, state fairs while school is in session?
Many. I mean, most of them. I think there's only two or three that accommodate, well, two, which is Minnesota and one of those states that I have.
Virginia.
Prevent the school from being at the same time as the state fair, but all of the rest of the schools are able to have the state fair going at the same time, and actually most of the states in the country are very permissive. They allow the schools to start whenever they want.
Thank you, Representative Depke. Representative Benson, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just want to thank Representative Depke for bringing this bill forward. I know that the school districts that she and I represent are strongly in favor of the bill. And I just would note, even though Mr. Carlson, Mr. Bagnulli vindicated that the Thursday-Friday compromise, which I see the language as being Representative Depke has put in, does attempt at least to deal with some of the concerns that you had. But I have not heard over the years those who are in opposition to this kind of legislation coming up with any compromise language. So I just want to compliment the author of the bill.
Representative Depke.
I want to share that compliment with my colleague Kim Norton, who has also been fighting for this bill for all the years she's been in the legislature. So thank you, Representative Norton.
And Representative Norton, you have the next question.
Thank you. And I would echo everything I've heard in support of this bill. And I guess I'm a little surprised to hear that you're not convinced about the academic gains. Rochester has a Longfellow School District, which is a year-round school, which has proven that not having the gap in the summer, they have a gap, 6 weeks, but it's not as long. And they have for years been able to prove that this has made a difference. And they're not alone. And I also think there's plenty of data, as was shared earlier, about ACT, AP testing, depending on when that testing occurs within the second semester, does impact those students' scores. So I think there is information out there. And my hope, Madam Chair, is that this is an education policy committee, and we have historically, and I hope we will continue to do what's best for the kids policy-wise. And I'm sympathetic to some of these the concerns, but I guess the point I wanted to make is that this compromise, which we tried on the House floor several years ago, is indeed a compromise. It's not an all or nothing. It was an effort to address the concerns both by the Fair Board and by the resort industry, and you're not getting everything you want. I understand that, but we're not getting everything we want either, which is complete flexibility for the school year. This is a protection, and so I guess I know you're paid to do what you do, and I know you're going to continue to give that message, but I would like for the rest of the committee to understand that Representative Depke's bill is indeed an effort to offer a fair compromise, which is a five-day weekend to accommodate fair and resorts, but also give schools the flexibility that they need. And I had a bunch of notes that I was going to read, but I think all the testifiers have hit all the salient points, so I won't repeat them. But I would very much support Representative Depke's bill and hope the rest of the committee, and particularly when we're talking education policy, will as well.
Thank you, Representative Norton. And you know what I've noticed is that the department has to continually move the MCA test later in the spring so that students have had an opportunity to learn the skills and knowledges on which they'll be tested. The later that's moved, the more difficult it is to get the results back during the school year. So as long as we push off or allow that test date, those test dates to be pushed farther into the spring, the less effective getting the results back are, because it is so important for teachers and school staff and parents to know how their children scored. Mr. Carlson, you have a comment, I guess?
Madam Chair and members, Mr. Ralston just talked to you about 27 districts in southwestern Minnesota that started early, and their first report is that their test scores were flat. It had no change, as reported by the Department of Education, no change on learning outcomes. And we have tried an attempt at compromise on this issue for a number of years. The legislature approved a legislation that had schools start not prior to September 1st. That compromise didn't work. And it didn't work for a number of entities, and it was changed, and we went back to just requiring the post Labor Day requirement. So I think we have tried, but it didn't really work. And I don't think that there is definitive evidence at all that you can suggest that starting prior to Labor Day has an impact on test scores or learning outcomes. But I can tell you it has a dramatic impact on a number of important segments in Minnesota's economy, and we appreciate the support that the legislature's provided to that issue in the past.
Representative Norton, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would point out that that waiver is brand new. So
it's 1 year.
give them a break here. It's brand new. And I would say I looked when I carried this bill, before we had the nice, generous five-day option, I looked at the impact on when school started, the years that it was repealed, and there was no effect on the resort industry. So there is equal evidence either way on this issue, and where there's no argument is that this bill is about local control and about trusting our local school boards to do what they think is best and get the legislature out of micromanaging. There's no argument about that point.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think two quick comments. One, to your recent comments about the challenge of getting the MCAs back in a timely fashion. I toured a school recently that is one of the SIG grant recipients, so one of those lowest performing schools in the state, and the principal there refers to the MCAs as the autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think perhaps the question there is less about start date and more about the value of the MCAs for education. And their timing of their return to the schools being just one of those factors. I won't pick a fight about the value of time on task for kids. I think we all know that, particularly for lower income students who often don't have the opportunity to go to the resorts and go to camps and participate in a lot of the extracurricular enrichment activities that many of our children are involved in, need the time on task. And my school district is looking at doing some significant things for the most challenged kids. So I won't pick that fight, but I will ask a question for Mr. Bagnoli. I'm wondering if you could just share with the committee your experience in 4-H as a child.
Mr. Bagnoli.
And your experience showing animals at the state fair.
Mr. Bagnoli, do you have a joke to tell?
No, I don't, Madam Chair. I would note just on what
Madam Chair and Representative Dadney's sort of initial statement, this bill does not add one day of additional time in the classroom. It provides more flexibility on when those days might occur, but it doesn't add one day. As to my experience in 4-H, my experience, I think, is similar, well, I'm not sure, similar perhaps to yours or many of your constituents, which is I admire the kids that do it. I think they put a lot of time and effort into it and learn a lot of valuable life skills in doing it, and wish I had the experience, frankly. So,
Representative Murdoch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And House File 2325 really puts me in a rock and a hard spot here, being a business person from Lake Country. And just a few comments here. I understand the intent. Representative Debicki, I understand your intent. The education of our children is of the utmost importance, but also being a business person in Lake Country, you know, I guess I look at this bill, I don't see any co-authors from Lake Country on here. I don't see Representative Nornes, I don't see Representative Ward, I don't see Representative Hancock, I don't see anybody on this bill from Lake Country areas. And it does get after the resorts if you start after Labor Day. It also gets after Main Street businesses in those areas. In Perham, we see a dramatic drop in business on August 15th when football camp starts and volleyball camp starts. You know, before they start, we see all sorts of ages there, the teenagers, the little kids. The camps start, all you see is the grandparents with little kids or the parents with the little kids. You don't see the families with the teenagers because they're at football camp. And then after that, the state fair. So it goes beyond just the state fair start. You know, the sports season kills us right away. Our customer count drops. And Joel, you alluded to the Saturday to Saturday thing. And that's true. It is Saturday to Saturday in Lake Country. So we'd be getting after that part of their business. And I guess, you know, with that being said, I just can't support this. It's you know, the education of our kids is important, don't get me wrong. But this really damages businesses. I know it's optional, and maybe the resort people would have to get on the school boards and to do this, to remedy this. But initially, it really hurts. You know, this would really hurt. And, you know, it's not very often that I get to speak up in here, Representative Moran. She asked me a couple weeks ago, are you ever going to speak in committee? And I said, well, yeah, I do have a voice, and I'll speak when I do have something to say that's pertinent to my district, and this is pertinent to my district. But it's not very often I get to tick off the Minnesota Business Partnership and Ed Minnesota at the same time. So I've probably made them mad at me. But with that said, I can't support the bill. And Madam Chair, if you want me to, I'll go sit with Joel and Joe up there. Anyway, thank you.
Representative Keel.
Well, my brother has a resort in Representative Murdoch's district. So, and I will reinforce the point that not only is it difficult for him when families don't come, but it also, now his children have grown, but it was also a big thing for my nephews and nieces to work at the resort, and he relied on them. But more importantly, I represent agriculture, and I am a farmer. And when my children, my boys especially, well, my daughters too, went into fall sports, they went to work out at 6, 8 in the morning, and then promptly came home, ate, and went out to the field or whatever was needed on those days. And in my agricultural world, unlike southern Minnesota, we are harvesting anywhere from July until, well, it lasts through October. So our children, even when school starts, are quite often helping us on the farm. And so I really wrestle with this, liking the flexibility of school boards deciding whether or not they can start whenever. I also understand the effects of agriculture, and I too while I was never in 4-H, and I don't really know why that was, but anyway, I've met lots of families where they are gone for the week,
And in my area, the five-day weekend, even if they were going to go for that long, would need another 2 days to travel with taking animals down and those types of things. So they would miss school if the schools so decided to start early. I know my school district does support this. Quite a few of my school districts emailed me and did support this, the superintendents. But my question is, how will this work if school A decides to start August 15th, school B doesn't start until September 3rd? You know, you've got individual schools, students going back and forth on lines, because that's quite a bit. I have four school buses that go by my home. So with open enrollment. So what effect will this have on that type of a thing? I'm not sold that school districts have to all start at the same date, but I'm just wondering, how will this affect them?
Representative Depke.
Representative Keel, it is a local control issue. You've been on a school board, and I've been on a school board, and we work on the school districts. So are you talking about how is it going to work between districts?
Yeah, probably a conference, you know.
I would think so. I think that's probably what you'll be doing. I mean, it's not going to require them to start any time. I mean, they have to start school year, but I mean, they have a days that they're required to be in school, and that's going to be worked out on the local levels.
Representative Keel.
And I understand that. I guess I've never really shared a lot of this, but I've been talking to my school districts about doing some sharing of classes in the district. And maybe they would get together as, you know, a neighboring schools and say, hey, we don't want to start at August 15th or whatever. they're talking about sharing teachers. We already have an agricultural program where there is one teacher that serves four schools. He or she attends a school every day, and the class is online the rest of the days. And so I could see that being a conflict. And that's to provide agricultural education in schools that can't afford a full teacher. So I understand the local control, so thank you.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an issue that I've had some experience with in central Minnesota, and it's probably coming from a completely different angle than we've even heard from here today. One of the issues that happens is Labor Day is not a fixed date on the calendar, it's a fixed day of the week on the calendar. And when when Labor Day falls on September 7th or real close to that date, it kicks the school year out almost until mid-June. And I can tell you that many students that I've encountered want to be involved in summer band programs and some other kinds of programs, and actually can preclude them from participation in a summer tour program, competing at different city festivals and different parades, and that academic experience, that's not part of the regular school year. I can speak for myself, knowing that when I was in school, we had did not have the prohibition on starting school before Labor Day, and I hate to admit it, but by the end of August, I was ready to go back to school. But when Memorial Day came, I was ready to get out of school. And so I questioned, are we shifting it within the schedule for the resorts and for the other kinds of activities in the first part of June? To sacrifice that type of revenue and those types of opportunities for people and resorts and things to be able to get out and to do. Would families take their students out of school the last week of school and go to a resort when they would have more time in the summer? I just think we have to think about some of those types of things. Obviously, we've seen over the years in statute and in policy the need to allow exceptions. We talked about the number of school districts in southwestern Minnesota that have an exception. We also have an exception under law that says if you are going to have a building project or construction project, you can be exempted. Mm-hmm. We have the flexible learning year. I suspect if you're a large school district, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Anoka, Hennepin, you've always got a construction project going, so you could always fall under this waiver. Earlier this year, we had Representative Eakin coming in and suggesting to us that if your school district has suffered closure because of some natural disaster within, and he brought forward a formula on that, you can be exempted. I question, what's the next group that we're going to exempt? If my fields don't yield a certain number of bushels of corn per. I need to have the kids there to be able to help with some of those kinds of things. If I don't have my, you know, as many blue ribbons coming from the state fair, maybe we need to be closer home. I realize I'm being somewhat facetious with my last two comments, but I think we have to look at it on a higher level. If we continue to do this, pretty soon I fear that only the school districts in my district will be the ones that have to start at or after Labor Day, because we're giving everyone an exception to the rule. This allows for more flexibility at the local level. I guess it really isn't a question, more just a sounding off on my thoughts and opinions. And like Representative Murdoch, I don't speak much, but apparently when I do, I get a little passionate in this committee. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, should we do a wrap-up now on that? I don't think we have any, unless any more of the committee wants to speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson and Mr. Vagnoli.
Well, I need to ask Representative Yetke, okay. Are there others in the audience who have concerns?
Yes, Kurt Schneider-Wynn has asked if anyone who has
Others in the audience who have concerns, please come down. We have to give them due time.
Sure.
No? Okay. Mr. Schneiderwind,
Madam Chair, my name is Kurt Schneiderwind on staff of the School Board Association, and it's amazing how history gets revised around this place, because I think it's very clear that we were in agreement on the September 1, an agreement between the State Fair and the Congress on a September 1 school start date. And it wasn't that we disagreed with that. It was a committee in the other body late in the evening not dealing with education that passed the amendment. So we were comfortable with the September 1 agreement, and we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for that amendment. So that's, I think you need to understand that piece. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderwind. And members, there is in your folders a handout that has on its top page the Orono Action Legislative Action Committee's presentation, so if you just like to refer to that for your own information. With that said, Representative Depke, closing remarks, please.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. We've heard today testimony on both sides, obviously, and you can see that even amongst our committee members, we have some people that are concerned about this particular bill. But I have to say that Mr. Carlson and Mr. Vagnoli said a couple of things that I just want to remind you of. It's amazing to me, and I've only been in the legislature the last 4 years, but Mr. Carlson testified that he's been working on against this bill or a similar bill since 1985, and I think the lock on this chain is getting a little rusty, to tell you the truth. Mr. Vagnoli also said that we need to keep things like we always have. Members, this is the Education Reform Committee. Those of us on this committee know more than anyone right now, and those on our front lines, our superintendents and our teachers and our school boards, know that we can't keep everything the way it is, because our society has moved on and our schools are facing issues now that we never even dreamt about in 1985. This is time today, this year, in this committee, to unlock the chain that restricts our schools and our school boards from making the decisions on what's best for our kids, our families, and our communities. This is a permissive bill, and it's all about what Mr. Schneiderwin said. It's all about choice, and it's all about trust. And I think that those are key words that we all go forward with when we're dealing with the children in our state. Thank you very much, Madam
Chair. Thank you, Representative Depke. With that, the chair will renew the motion that House File 2325 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the general register. Cindy Christ and MACD, would you come down and share with us some information? And thank you, everyone, who attended this hearing today. Welcome to our committee. Say your name for the record, and please begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Crist. I'm legislative liaison for MACD, the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, and today is our day at the Capitol. We have a number of folks with us today. A couple of them are coming down, and maybe the rest of them can stand up just to be recognized, including our colleagues from Education Minnesota who work with student organizations who helped us connect with some of our students to be here. And we have additional folks who will be in and out today, as you can imagine.
So, Ms. Crist, are these teacher candidates who are visiting us, or?
Some are teacher candidates, some are faculty, some are administrators.
Excellent.
At our MACD Institute.
It's great to have you here, and welcome to the Day on the Hill for MACD. Ms. Crist.
And we do expect to have more folks in and out today. Some of them may be seeking you out in your offices as the day progresses. But we had one faculty member, for example, who was going to be here this morning who needed to be in a school meeting with a student teacher who was having some problems. And, you know, the life of many of you are teachers, you know, the life of faculty and students. So we have two people who we'd like to have a brief opportunity to speak to you today. And we do have a one-page legislative and policy priorities handout that we'd like to have distributed to the committee if that's possible. So I'd like to introduce Jo Olson. She's the dean. I said that so quickly, it may not have sounded right. Jo Olson. Kind of sounded like Joel. Jo Olson. She's the president this year of MACD and the dean of the College of Education at the College of St. Scholastica.
And welcome to our committee, Ms. Olson.
And we have a student from College of St. Benedict, St. John University. And I just want to let you know in advance, when we said you may have an opportunity to speak today, what would you like to talk about? She identified herself with her fellow student what she wanted to speak about, so they have not been prepped by us, just so you know. So, Joe.
Ms. Olson, please say your name for the record and begin.
Jo Olson, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to speak and for being here today. It's a great opportunity. MACD, for those of you who maybe are not familiar, is a voluntary organization that represents all 31 institutions that prepare teachers in Minnesota. We also have a few affiliate members. And today, we have a faculty member and a student from the College of St. John, St. Ben's, who is going to speak with you. But before we do that, I would like to just share with you that the paper that is being passed around does summarize our four legislative priorities. And they are developed by all members of the MACD organization. They focus on closing the achievement gap, which I know is a statewide initiative, preparing more diverse teachers for the classrooms, requiring and holding the same standards for alternative licensure programs as is done for the regular programs and traditional programs that prepare teachers, and also for recognizing specifically the costs and benefits of high-quality assessments that are now a very important issue for our students. And I'd like to allow the student to talk most of the time, so I'll turn it over to you.
Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Okay. I'm Leah Shepherd. I'm a junior at the College of St. Benedict, and I am a Spanish education major with an ESL minor. And there are two things I'd like to talk to you about with in relation to higher education and teacher education preparation. One is the basic skills MTLE, and I'm asking that we retain flexibility in that, like, we are flexible in what point do these students need to pass, and allowing room for growth during this teacher education program. And the implications with this, if not, are that there are lower percentage for the pass rates, especially within reading and writing. And this is widening the achievement gap in that it's really encouraging non-native English speakers to pass the test. And this is something I'm really passionate about as an ESL minor. And then the second thing is the content area MTLE licensure test, and especially within the foreign language, because that's pertinent to me. But there is a 20% and lower pass rate for foreign language right now in Minnesota. And this is in comparison to the Praxis, which was about like a year and a half, 2 years before, where it had about a 70 to 75% pass rate. And every peer that I've known at St. Ben, St. John's has had to retake this test, which is something that's concerning to me. And especially as a 4.0 student and an honors student, I've done a lot of work within my content area, and I feel pretty confident that I can teach Spanish, but this test is kind of telling me otherwise, that I have a 0% chance of passing it at this point. So, and I know that speaking with other students, we need better study materials if we're going to pass this test, and that I know Shannon can speak more to the volumes of students that are having issues with this. But I just ask that from a perspective of a student, you think about the implications of us not passing these tests, and especially maybe having more trust in the students, because I know I'm preparing myself well for this exam and to be a quality teacher. So.
Thank you, Ms. Shepherd. Please say your name for the record and please begin.
Sure. I'm Shannon Essler-Petty, and I'm an instructor at the College of St. Ben, St. John's University.
Could you just spell your hyphenated last name?
Sure. Essler hyphen Petty.
Thank you very much, Ms. Shepherd.
So I asked a bunch of my students. I have 22 students currently trying to take the mid-level math endorsement exam through the MTLEs. So within those 22 students that actually want to teach middle school math, and they can say that out loud and they have passion for it, I have one student that has passed that exam. The other 21 have tried multiple times to pass this exam. I'm not sure if you're aware, but the last statistics that came out for the pass rate for this MTLE mid-level math exam was 10% on the first test and 20% on the second test. There are 48 word problems on both exams. You have 60 minutes to complete the exams. The test shuts off after 60 minutes. Now, within these word problems, you have to read the word problem, you have to interpret it, pick the formula, pull up the formula sheet, put down the formula sheet, pull up the calculator, put in the numbers to the calculator, and then go back and answer the question. So, if you spend more than 1 minute on any one problem, you are now behind on this exam. Within the study materials, Pearson obviously makes you pay for the study materials. The exam is also $135 to take the exam. So with 21 students having to repeat taking this exam, there is something that is wrong with the exam. Most of my students have successful student teaching experiences. Most of them are straight A students and are still unable to pass this exam. So I kind of asked some of them what they would want me to say, and one is they need more time, more study materials, and the test itself is flawed as far as too many problems, plus then you have to pull up the formula sheet, pull up the calculator. The calculator is a basic calculator. You don't get to bring in your own calculator. So that's what I would...
And Ms. Petty, you're referring to the basic skills math test or to the content test?
I'm talking to the content mid-level math exam.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is mastery of content that these teacher candidates will teach.
Right.
Thank you. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has there been any work done on if this wasn't timed or if it was paper, pencil, or if they had their own calculator? Has there been any opportunity to see if that would change the rate at this point? And is there an option for a paper-pencil test if someone doesn't want to use a computer?
I don't believe so.
Ms. Petty?
I don't believe so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Norton, follow-up? Well, thank you very much. I see no other questions from members. Ms. Christ, any closing comments?
No, Madam Chair, thank you very much for listening. And I said we'll have folks around all day. We'll hang out in the hall for a little while. If some of you would like to connect directly, we do have, a couple of other students here today and faculty and administrators from other institutions. So I really thank you for the time. I know you have a very busy agenda, and we appreciate having the opportunity to speak.
Well, we're
to
very
you.
Happy to have you. And I think Ms. Olson wanted to say something.
I just wanted to offer, too, if you have other questions about any of the tests or if it's raised issues for you, any of the members of MACT would be very happy to address those with you.
Thank you very much, and we will do that during the day. Thank you very much, Ms. Shepherd and Ms. Petty. And members, we won't have to resume meeting tonight. Be careful if there's snow, and look forward to seeing you Thursday. With that, meeting is adjourned.